ADHD meds is one of the most complex, tricky elements of ADHD diagnosis. Even after appointments with psychiatrists or pediatricians, I see so many ADHD mums left with unanswered questions on the Facebook groups trying to find clarity or hope or some kind of answer because they can't get back in for another 3 months. Often they'll be Googling at 3 a.m. only to end up down some rabbit hole with the worst case scenarios. And that's why I created the ADHD Guide to Medication. It is the resource I wish I had when I first tiptoed into the world of stimulants, side effects, and skeptical family members who think that medication is just a lazy parenting shortcut. It is terrifying to start ADHD meds for yourself or your child. This guide tackles those overwhelming questions. What can I ask for? What options are available? How do I manage side effects without waiting 3 months for another appointment? It also talks about how to talk to your doctor, how to talk to your specialist, what can you push back on, how to advocate for timing changes, what to do when you don't agree with the recommendations, and also what to expect from the moment that the meds kick in. Whether you're giving it a go or whether you're clinging to your third coffee for the day, this guide has your back. Grab your copy now at adhdmums.com.au. And all of the links will be in the show notes.
Hello and welcome back to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have a big episode, one of the most requested, on hormones. And I have brought in an expert, Dr. Miranda Robinson. And how are you, Miranda?
I'm good, thank you.
So Dr. Miranda was referred to me a number of times on Instagram as someone who's just so knowledgeable and influential in Australian female health. Because we're on video, I can see Miranda kind of grimacing with the bio. People hate their bios. I was wondering, Miranda, did you want to give us a little bit of an idea of your background before we get started?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an obstetrician and gynecologist. I originate from New Zealand. I came to Australia in 97 and started my training here in Australia in ONG. It was kind of was the last thing I thought I would end up doing, but it was when I was doing my diploma in ONG at the Women's here in Melbourne. It was a couple of people who took me under their wing and I just really fell in love with the field, looking after women. I guess I've always had issues throughout the years where I've had some mental health struggles myself, which I've had been put down to depression and anxiety, and I guess feelings of overwhelm. But it wasn't really until I had children myself and the layers of stress that come with that, and then quite a difficult separation and divorce and becoming a single parent, and then trying to keep all my balls in the air as a single parent and continuing to have a stressful career, going through another episode of depression. And then finding out that one of my children was neurodivergent, that I started to question myself because I saw a lot of my own struggles in him. And then throughout the last 5 or 6 years, throughout the pandemic, actually really finding myself in burnout and realizing that was neurodivergent burnout. And the final piece of the puzzle was my daughter being diagnosed at 12 when we returned back to the classroom, that she was found to have auditory processing disorder, and really that was ADHD. That was the final piece of the puzzle because she and I are very similar. I went and got myself diagnosed. That's really the short version. The bigger version really was through my patients. I was seeing a lot of connections between neurodivergence and a number of medical complaints, which I'm sure you're aware there is a lot of crossover into many medical conditions, which I see in my gynecological practice. So some of the conditions that I see, things that are really sort of multifaceted in the sense that these women that are hypermobile and they will have a lot of many medical conditions that relate to that hypermobility. So migraines, irritable bowel syndrome, and chronic pain conditions. And a lot of them were coming back with diagnoses of ADHD. I started to actually put together a screening tool for neurodivergence for these women. And most of those women are coming back with diagnoses of either ADHD or autism or complex PTSD. And I think if this had been 5 years ago, I think there would have been a very different maybe reaction to that idea. But I think we're in a different time now where people are much more open to the idea of neurodivergence as being the answer to their distress and to their medical and body complaints. Yeah. So I'm sorry, it's a really long answer to your question, but
I just find it such a
fascinating time to be in women's health, because when I see a new patient, I'm not really there to ask what their presenting problem is. I just really want to hear their stories, because often their stories tell me the answer to what the problem is, because it's really just about getting to know a person, you know, because so many times I'm hearing people not being heard and they're not being listened to for so many years, and their trauma is all the way through, and we've re-traumatized them in the medical profession so many times over.
In regards to, like, it's just anxiety, or it's just menopause, or, you know, it's just being a teenager. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Or that's just normal. Or, for example, if someone's not really given time and space, you know, GPs are expected to give a lot for nothing and very little time to spend with complicated problems. And patients are getting more and more complex in their presentations. The system is really not geared towards people with complicated needs. So I think patients, they get told, as you say, they come in, and I had a patient only last week, she was in her 30s, and she clearly has been dealing with perimenopausal symptoms for about 5 years. Yeah, and it's pretty much been since she weaned off breastfeeding. She's been having hot flushes, she's been having high levels of anxiety and body aches. Her mother went through menopause by the age of 40. So if someone had just actually listened to her, then, you know, it would have been clear what her needs were.
Yeah, rather than just saying, well, you're 25, so you can't be in menopause yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But exactly. Maybe for her, she was in perimenopause. That's a great point.
Right. Yeah.
So why is it that ADHD and autism traits often worsen in hormonal shifts?
Well, I think that the estrogen is such a powerful co-regulator. So for many reasons, as we know, we are very sensitive when it comes to our external world, but also our internal world. We can be hypersensitive and we can be hyposensitive when it comes to external sensory system. So we can be misophonic, but at the same time, we sometimes get told that we have selective hearing loss. And that's not that we do. We're not deliberately not hearing someone. It's just we may have auditory processing issues. So I'm the same. I have misophonia. I cannot stand the sound of people chewing or certain types of music playing when I just grind my gears. But at the same time, if I'm super hyper-focused, I literally cannot hear someone talking to me unless they literally come up to me and tap me. But it's the same with our interoceptive world. But when our estrogen is in a lowered state, it actually is a co-regulator in the prefrontal cortex, and it actually lowers the ability for dopamine to work in the prefrontal cortex, which is why women with ADHD are much more prone to have PMDD, so premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So for me, when I see that alongside things like migraines or anxiety or postnatal depression on a referral letter, it's like a little ding ding. I wonder if this woman's ever been screened for ADHD or they've got a history of trauma. It's often a time when we all feel a bit down in the dumps and a little bit dysregulated. But if they're actually having major issues with dysregulation to the point of a diagnosable mental health concern in that time in the luteal phase of their cycle, then they're much more likely, I believe, to be diagnosable with ADHD or maybe CTPSD or autism. So that's when I would think about screening. But it's also a powerful co-regulator for pain. So if you are feeling more disgruntled, you're feeling more on edge, you're more sensory, and your dopamine is not working as well in your prefrontal cortex, you're much more likely to be feeling the effects of pain than if you're feeling better. You're going to be sleeping better. You're going to be feeling more able to regulate yourself if you have a noxious stimulus come into the body. It's the same when it's the spoon theory, right? If you've all wigged out, too many spoons being used up, you can't deal with that one more thing that's coming in. So this is why women who have ADHD or autism are much more likely to have period pain and are much more likely to be diagnosed with endometriosis than women who aren't. Because the rate of endometriosis is not higher amongst neurodivergent women than other women. It's just we're more likely to find it because I believe, it's just my belief around it, is that our interoceptive needs are higher because of our dysregulation and our hormonal requirements, especially if we're undiagnosed.
I did a solo episode, I think it was a couple of months ago, about PMDD.
Yeah.
And I'm clearly not an expert, medical expert. It was more around, if you feel like this, this may be what it is.
Yes.
And I said at the end, I felt quite bad doing the episode because at the end of it, what you could do about it, the strategies, what your options were, weren't great. And I said, I'm really sorry. This is the options that I can see. If anyone knows anything different, you know, let me know. And no one did. However, I got an outpour of people that said, thank you for the episode. This was so important. And I definitely have that. But yet there wasn't much there for, like, in terms of PMDD and perimenopause, those kind of things that a lot of us are experiencing. What are some things, or is there none that you can actually do?
Oh, I think there's a lot that we can do.
Is there?
I think recognizing it.
I thought you were going to say there was nothing. And I was like, oh.
No, there's a lot. There's a lot. I think it really depends on what the woman's wanting. I think it's just recognition that it exists and not going crazy, you know, because I think a lot of women have been told that's normal to feel a bit down.
Yeah.
Which is true. And I think it's the drop in estrogen and the luteal phase and the rise of progesterone. It's normal to feel a little bit down, a little bit like you want to eat a lot of ice cream and you feel bloated. Those things are very normal, but PMDD is a diagnosable mental health condition under DSM criteria. So it's a very different condition than just plain old PMS. So this is a condition that can take days out of a woman's month, where it can be sometimes for some women up to 2 weeks out of their month of feeling very down, suicidal. You know, it can disrupt their working life. It can disrupt relationships, can end relationships with their children. That can cause them to become quite violent. I've had some patients where, you know, they are actually, you know, can be quite threatening towards their members of their family. So there are lots of options. Sometimes we need to put women on hormonal contraceptives because the only way to stop the ups and downs of their hormones is to do that. If they're a younger woman, if they're perimenopausal, their PMDD gets worse because their underlying estrogen levels are starting to wane over time. So the drop in estrogen in the second half of the cycle was even more profound. So going on to a small amount of estrogen throughout the month. But if they're diagnosed with ADHD, they can talk to their psychiatrists if they are understanding. Some psychiatrists are not, about if they're already on Vyvanse, for example, they can ask about getting a smaller dose of Vyvanse that they can use on those days because they need more on those days. And if they can, if they are tolerant of the stimulants, or they can talk about getting some extra dexamphetamine that they can use, or whatever it is that they're using, if they're using Ritalin or Concerta or whatever it is they're using. Or we can talk about, yeah, using some estrogen and then using a little bit extra estrogen in those days. And sometimes a Mirena can be very useful. Okay. So Mirena is a type of IUD. So quite often your periods are starting to get heavier as well. And one of the theories around why you start to feel so much worse in those days leading up to your period is the release of certain histamines and prostaglandins. And those really inflammatory hormones have been released into the body, which make you feel really edgy, that they may go through some pathways in your brain called the GABA pathways, which are really to do with your mood and to do with pain receptors in the brain. They make you feel edgy. They make you feel moody. They make you feel just not yourself. They are that to do with the change in neurotransmitters in the brain. And so if we can manage those levels with prostaglandins, even maybe even trying some antihistamines, they may be useful. And also some vitamin supplementation may be helpful. So things like omega-3 fatty acids. I've started taking NAC. I don't know if you've heard of NAC, N-acetylcysteine, which is a amino acid supplementation. I've found that being really useful for me in terms of that sort of foggy brain feeling, which we think may be to do with some of those inflammatory markers in the brain, really just making you feel just a bit blah, a bit like your cognition's really off. But I think one of the things that I find about the menopause and a lot about this time of the life, it's not just about hormones. It's also about that feeling that you've got these children that are becoming, especially if you've got neurodivergent children, they're coming to a stage of their life where they're coming into their own. I've got adolescent children. I've got aging parents that are undiagnosed neurodivergent. So you've got difficult people and you're being sandwiched between them. And then you're going through your own shit that, you know, hasn't been dealt with. And I'm finding there's a lot of women, if they're sort of coming into themselves, into their neurodivergent selves, especially when you're feeling especially fractured at that time of the month, it's a lot of this unsolved, undealt with micro trauma from your life. And I think that if you have got a trauma-informed psychologist who's really good at somatic work, and what I mean by that is like polyvagal theory. You've heard of polyvagal theory? So doing lots of meditation, you know, deep breathing, because what we're talking about is a system that's very hypervigilant. So women like, you know, getting very teary, very anxious, very angry, very ragey, or the worst case, you know, sometimes very dissociated. You know, it's a body in trauma. And when the hormones are not working, it's like all your chickens have come home to roost. It's a time of life where everything's catching up. I mean, I'm only really talking about my own personal experience of a lot of things in my life that I've actually dealt with in the last year, you know, and working in medicine in a system when you're a very sensitive person who kind of went into medicine to try and help people in a system that really doesn't sometimes. And yeah, just been getting a lot of good therapy. And that's really helped a lot with some of these changes that, you know, life throws at you to help just help me to stay regulated in times when I'm feeling dysregulated. Yeah, that's been really helpful. So EMDR has been really helpful for me, which is a type of therapy. I'm not sure whether you've talked about that in any of your episodes, but
I think before this one comes out, there's going to be a personal experience on EMDR that comes out, and also a personal experience on being in perimenopause and the person not knowing that they were for quite a while. So yeah, that will come out before yours, so people will know what EMDR is. If they don't know what EMDR is, they can always go to the show notes and I'll put the episode link and a link to what that is.
Yeah.
What I did have a burning question for you was in the episode where I interviewed the everyday Aussie mum that's going to come out before yours, it was her personal experience of being in perimenopause and having multiple doctors tell her that it was all normal, until eventually she found a specialist that diagnosed her and she started HRT, which drastically changed her life. And now she's like a foghorn all over the nation about how amazing it is to know if you're in perimenopause.
She wants everyone to know. She keeps telling everybody. She goes, oh my God, oh my God, oh my aches and pains of God, and I'm sleeping and I'm mad. Da, 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 da.
She just emailed me so intensely, like, please, can I just share? So if anyone else feels like this, they can seek help. And it was such a great episode. Yes. But one thing that I did ask her, which I felt that she wasn't clear on because she's not a medical professional, was she was really wanting to talk about how great the HRT had been for her. And I said to her, from a very amateur, not knowing anything about the body place, the way that you're talking about it, if you are a neurodivergent woman and you're approaching perimenopause, should we all just go and get HRT? Like, is it for everybody? Is it not? Like, because she talked about it so intensely, I was like, I just want to get some.
Yeah. Well, I think neurodivergent brains definitely benefit from HRT, but we can't be saying it's the panacea for everybody, because we need to individualize all medical care, right? Because some women are not going to want to have hormones, because I have a lot of patients that are wanting to be natural. I've got a lot of patients with ADHD who have never gone onto stimulants because they don't want to be on medication. And that's absolutely fine. Even though the longitudinal studies tell us that women who are on stimulants, that their long-term quality of life and pain scores are far better than women who don't take stimulants. So, I mean, the evidence is now out there. And we know that the long-term studies on women who take HRT is that quality of life scores and longevity and mortality and morbidity is lower. But of course, there are going to be women who have had breast cancer. There are women who have medical conditions that it's just not appropriate for them to be on HRT
for whatever reason.
But if you don't have a contraindication to HRT and you're going through the perimenopause, there are definitely going to be huge benefits. And the really important thing is seeing someone who understands that most women who are neurodivergent are going to need almost certainly higher doses than the average woman or may do. And that there's also maybe some benefits of also going on to testosterone for many neurodivergent women. Not all, but I've probably used a lot more testosterone in the last 12 months than I ever have before, because it does seem to be a huge cognitive benefit for neurodivergent women that I've seen.
One thing that's really tricky, I think, is we really have to see a psychiatrist to get access to the stimulant medication that a lot of us really rely on. But then, you know, someone like yourself seems so knowledgeable, and I'm like, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to go and see? I'm sure you'll get a lot of people that will email you and probably want to try and book in with you, right, from this session, because I'm like, wow. The problem is that then I'm thinking, I still have to get the ADHD medication over from the psychiatrist. But at the moment, to be honest, I have to go to a GP to go and get an antidepressant, because I can't get the one that I want from the psychiatrist because he continues to give me SSRIs that don't suit me and I don't like. So I have to take the dexamphetamine, go off to get a different GP to get an antidepressant, which is the only one I've ever found that helps. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to have to, where do I go to get HRT? Like, who is overall looking at our care? Like, this is just such a head fuck.
Well, I know. I find it actually extremely ableist and very frustrating. Considering Ritalin was invented in the 1930s, why the hell is it to an S8? You know, why are we still being treated like Muppets?
I agree. And why is Ritalin still the first point of call? Even for people who have tried it, it doesn't work. We're still giving our children that because we've got no other choice. You have to try it first.
Yes. I mean, having said that, though, actually, I forgot to mention that before. Was actually like, that was the clincher for me. I tried my son's Ritalin and I was like, oh,
I've tried Ritalin too.
Oh my God. My head is at peace.
Oh, I just felt amazing. The come down was like coming off a cliff on the other side of it.
I guess I just didn't know any better. But I just was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I went out to a social function. I could actually concentrate on talking to somebody for the first time without getting distracted and overwhelmed. And I'd always thought that I had someone who had social anxiety, but it wasn't that. It was just felt completely overwhelmed.
Too many thoughts.
Just too many thoughts. And almost like I could pick up the vibe of the room, like, you know, who's had a bad day, who's not had a bad day, who's going through shit at home, or it's just like, oh no, that's too much. I can't deal with this. Yeah.
So back to HRT for a second. Yes. So because I know there'll be a lot of women. So I love what you said about individualized care, because what we are talking about is extremely individualized. And I love that you brought that up. All women who listen and they're like, wow, I actually do need to see a specialist, or I do need to do something about this. Where do women go if they think they are experiencing PMDD or they may be in perimenopause? Where do we go?
So, and obviously it depends on where you are in Australia or New Zealand or wherever you're listening from. There are a number of people who specialize in PMDD or perimenopause. And for example, in Melbourne, there are a number of GPs who specialize in women's health. You'll often find your local family doctor is not the best person, which is a shame because, you know, and you'll find a lot of local family doctors insist on doing a blood test to diagnose you in menopause, which is very frustrating because a lot of women need hormones before their last period, you know, it happens. Menopause is when your periods finish for more than 12 months, but women may have symptoms for a decade before that happens. And the suffering, you know, not in silence, because I've often seen two or three or four doctors before they finally get the help they need. And they're still cycling. They're still having regular periods. And we know that often the first sign of the perimenopause are mental health side effects of the perimenopause, anxiety, sleeplessness, depression, before they get physical side effects. And especially in neurodivergent women, women who may not even know they're neurodivergent. So before they get hot flushes, before they get night sweats, before they get the body aches and the migraines, they're getting these, you know, psychological side effects of the perimenopause. But they're told that they've got anxiety, so they get put on an antidepressant.
Which will work.
To a certain degree, but it's not the right treatment. Yeah.
So it's a second-rate treatment for people who can't take hormones. Yeah, it's kind of like if you have ADHD and you're given an antidepressant, not a stimulant, you're kind of treating a symptom, but you're not really getting to the heart of it.
And it can. That's right. And we do know that some SSRIs or SNRIs are actually very useful for some ADHD symptoms, but not really, as you say, getting to the heart of it.
Yeah.
I think going to a GP who specializes in women's health, and I think advocating for yourself to say, look, I've done a lot of reading and I've listened to this podcast. I've listened to Dr. Miranda Robinson, who is a specialist gynecologist in women's health and in the perimenopause. And I've listened and, you know, I feel that a lot of the symptoms she was talking about align with what I'm experiencing. And I think that I'm in the perimenopause and I don't believe I need any blood tests, you know, and I would like to try some hormones for a month or two. And if it works, then that's the experiment that I need to go through. I don't need blood tests to be defined as perimenopausal.
I agree. The lived experience we had was similar, that she mentioned the blood testing to being not right, or that she came back fine and she wasn't. I did want to ask was, you know how you talked about taking Ritalin and then it became very clear to you that you had ADHD because you treated it and had such a drastic result. If you took HRT or a hormone and you weren't in perimenopause versus you were, what would be the different effect from taking it?
Well, you wouldn't notice any improvement.
Yeah. Okay, so you wouldn't have an adverse effect. I mean,
I've got a patient who's got significant PMDD. She's not 100% better from taking hormones. So she says, I've given her some estrogen to take and that's part of her cycle. She's not 100% better, but she's noticed a massive improvement. So she needs other treatments. She's got ADHD. She's on her stimulants. She's got a lot of trauma. I've started her on an SNRI as well. Mm-hmm. I think because she's got a lot of insomnia and she's got a lot of anxiety related symptoms. And I think, and she's getting nightmares. So I think she's got a lot of PTSD side effects. I think that'll be helpful. And I've asked her to go and see someone to get MDR. But I think it's made a difference. And then when it's for the menopause, you will notice some improvement. It may not be the right dose, but you will notice an improvement in symptoms. We're always going to have placebo effect no matter what. But I think if you're getting, you know, a massive improvement in symptoms without side effects, then I don't really see what the harm is. What's the harm?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, which is what I was confused about. I was like, it actually seems very similar to ADHD medication. It's kind of like, you have to prove that you have it. You often get a bit of gatekeeping, you know, in the process of, you know, medical gaslighting or whatever it is. And then what was the harm in taking a dexamphetamine or a Ritalin? Like, where's the harm? Why is it so hard to get to that point? Yes. The same with HRT and hormones. I'm not sure why there's the blood test and why there's this whole, that's normal, that's being a woman, that's being a mom. You know, I had a psychiatrist recently tell me, he goes, oh, why aren't you on antidepressants? Because you've got three children with additional needs. You need to have the heaviest dose of antidepressants. That's what all mums need. I'm like, whoa, that's a big statement.
That's what all mums need?
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting conversation, to say the least. But like this.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I just need a quick drink for that one.
Being a mum with kids with additional needs, that's going to be pretty shit. So you probably should really take a heavy dose of antidepressants. Like, what is the risks to taking a hormone or HRT to see if you are not sure? Is there any risk?
Well, most of the HRTs that we recommend these days are going to be low risk in the short term. I mean, the main risks with HRT are in the long term. So the HRTs that I usually start with are transdermal. So they're like gels usually that you rub into the skin. The most common side effects that you might have would be maybe some minor headaches, maybe some breast tenderness. I guess in the past when they were oral treatments, you know, there were some concerns around increasing your risks of blood clots, strokes, heart attacks, but they were more with women who were either right in the thick of it or after the menopause with a lot of associated you know, risks, you know, already had high blood pressure or already had cardiovascular risks. So women who had already been through menopause. So this is, we're talking, you know, data from the WHI trial, which is, you know, 20 years old now. So we mostly use transdermal estrogen these days, which has minimal to no risk of those kinds of side effects. So really, very little in the way of side effects. And, you know, most women just get benefit. And if they're not getting any benefits, then what you're talking about is not relating to menopause. It's other stuff going on in their life.
Yeah. So similar to ADHD, like if you gave somebody a few weeks trial, you would at least know if it was or it wasn't. And where
is
the
you know, with ADHD meds, it's instantaneous. It's,
I just wonder sometimes with the amount of time it takes and how long it takes. And I just was feeling, to be honest, there's a lot of similarities between the hormonal journey, the neurodivergent journey for mums as hoops. And it's very sad that I think that a lot of us have children. We get those red flags with our kids. We get diagnosed ourselves right on the cusp sometimes of perimenopause.
Exactly.
And it's like a perfect storm for just shit.
Exactly.
And it can be really hard, especially when, you know, you have to go to multiple people and prove it and research yourself. Now, Miranda is going to be back for hopefully more episodes. Yeah. So I'm going to try and keep this one contained because I think it's been so informative and I'm aware of people's attention spans. And also that sometimes we start on a podcast, we get halfway through, we never go back because we forget. So I'm going to try and keep this one contained to this particular topic. Is there anything you want to share on what we've spoken about that we've missed?
I think the really important thing is, and it's so hard because, you know, neurodivergent women are often being told that they're difficult patients, but we always feel we have to go into battle all the time. We're either going into battle for our kids, for our parents, and that, so it's a really hard for us to feel we have to go into battle for ourselves, but you do in this situation. And yes, so I think if you feel like you're in the perimenopause and this sort of gels with you in some way, these kind of messages that we're talking about today, then I think, you know, go in and talk to your GP. And if you're not getting any further ahead, then go somewhere else and ask about whether, you know, you can try some hormones. You don't need to see a gynecologist. A good women's healthcare GP should be able to help. Somewhere like the Jean Hale Centre here in Melbourne is another place, but there are plenty of places around like that that are, you know, women's health centres that can help get you started. And the really important thing also is, you know, this is not really something we'd even really talked about, but in the really important part of staying strong, you know, in terms of, I think we talk about exercise a lot with ADHD, but the really important part is keeping your muscles and keeping yourself moving, but the importance of strength training in the perimenopause, particularly for neurodivergent women, I find there's a lot to be gained, you know, for your regulation. I love going to the gym and just pushing a lot of weight, but it also gives me a lot of feeling that if I'm strong in my body, I can stay strong in my mind and I can advocate for myself because, you know, I can deadlift 150 kilos.
You can't really deadlift 150 kilos, can you really?
I can.
Oh, shit. Wow. Really? Well, that's amazing. Look, thank you so much for your time. This has been such an eye-opener. I really, really appreciate it.
No worries at all.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums Podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.